This show is brought to you by Podtize, podcast hosting and done-for-you production services that get you heard by more of your ideal listeners. Visit podtize.com to book a free strategy call. That's podtize.com.
When I get approached by people that want to do trade show swag, I'm always saying, hey, I have an idea. Why don't we make one really cool thing that you give to everyone? One thing, and put all that budget, because I know they have like $60 per person. If you think of everything, the water bottle and the pen with the name and all of the like the crappy tote bag and all of the things you can get, we could make one really cool thing.
Welcome to Care More, Be Better, a podcast for people like you who care about the social impact of conscious companies and everyday heroes. Hear inspiring stories from those who put people and planet before profit and personal gain. You'll learn how you can make a difference, vote with your dollars, and get involved today. Here's your host, Karina Balizzi.
Hello, fellow do-gooders and friends. I'm your host, Karina Balizzi, an activist and cause marketer who's passionate about social impact and sustainability. I even created a five-step guide to help you unleash your inner activist so you too can put more good into the world. To get this guide, all that you have to do is visit my website, caremorebebetter.com, and sign up for our newsletter. It will land in your inbox moments later. Today, we're going to revisit a subject we covered early last year in an interview with Carolyn Priebe of the Center for the Advancement of Garment Making, as we dig deep into the subject of fashion. My guest for today's deep dive into fashion is Britt Howard. Britt is an artist, an entrepreneur. She combines creative problem solving and a down-to-earth approach to build the work Portland Garment Factory is known for. The Portland Garment Factory, also known as PGF, is an award-winning zero-waste B Corp. PGF is a climate-neutral certified full-service factory that bridges design and production to create experiential installations, soft sculptures, high-end custom garments, and more. Britt sits on the boards of Business for a Better Portland and the Portland Institute of Contemporary Art, where she directly engages with community issues. Britt, welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Well, it's so good to have you here. You know, many in our audience may not already know the realities of the fashion industry, that it's one of the most polluting that is out there in the world. So let's talk about this soft goods manufacturing. What is it? What are the problems that you face?
Yes. Well, there's a myriad problems in this industry. And I would say that as a person who's running a manufacturing company from the United States and from specifically Portland, Oregon, where we don't have a garment manufacturing center the way that there is in like LA or New York, some of the things that we face are waste stream, you know, problems where there's not a place to put your waste after you've cut out thousands of units of fabric, for instance, or even the shipping in and importing of goods that aren't just like right down the street at a manufacturing facility the way that they would be in LA or something like that. So we have a few different hurdles and we're just working every day to work around them or overcome them or improve them or whatever needs to happen.
Well, you mentioned installations in your intro, and one of the things that got me thinking about is the waste around things like even trade shows and museum installations and, you know, the shipping of materials, the production or procurement of fabrics that might be used in these soft installations. So I just wonder if you could tell us a story that relates to that so that we could get a better conception or understanding of how that even impacts our environment.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And something I think not very many people talk about is the waste around trade shows and events or one-time pop-up things that happen in stores for maybe a new shoe is coming out or a new perfume is coming out and they need to do all these displays. How do we make that more sustainable and create that placemaking and do it in that, you know, a way that where you're still getting your marketing across? It's like a huge hurdle. So a story I can think of is, we've done a lot of installations in New York over the years because that's where a lot of the larger retail stores are. And we do a lot of retail store installations for, like I said, launches of different items. And ahead of the design, a lot of times we can talk about, like, something I like to ask my clients is end use. So, okay, so you're asking me to make this window display. What is the end use? Where does this go at the end? And sometimes they're taken aback by that question. Sometimes they know right away. You know, we store it in a warehouse and we try to recycle these mannequins or these, you know, huge butterfly sculpture, whatever it is that we're making, into another campaign. But even asking and pulling that question out of the client can help get their heads in the, okay, this isn't a permanent thing. And how can we solve for that ahead of time before we even start designing and choosing materials? So I like to ask that question at the beginning. And then as we get into it, you know, we offer the option for our clients to take things back to PGF and either upcycle them or down, you know, kind of like anything from taking things that aren't used and pulverizing them and making them into stuffing that would go into pillows that we make or something in the future, or cutting it up and making something different out of it. We have a shelter next door that houses all houseless women. And there's, you know, probably 60 residents over there. We can make things out of other things. We can make masks. We can make lap blankets. We can make pillowcases, like out of, you know what I'm saying? So we like to fill in our schedule and little gaps in our schedule with the sewers, with having these kind of like side projects. It's really kind of getting the client to get on board with that is the hardest part. I'd say that the solutions are there on our end. It's just other people wrapping their mind around their precious XYZ thing that we're making, not just sitting in a warehouse. Somehow that feels more safe.
Well, you know, and it's like, I've been to, I don't know how many trade shows in my life, in the Natural Channel alone, at least 100, most of which I have found to be incredibly wasteful. Often companies even manufacture a booth that only gets used one or two times, and then it's stored or scrapped, and who knows where it really goes from there. So I actually see in your image in the background, a patchwork chair. It looks like an IKEA chair that I used to have in college, kind of like the same shape, like a bucket like chair. Was that something that your team also created?
Yeah, I actually found these chairs. They're vintage. They're like club chairs. Oh, what way am I going? There's two of them. The other one's downstairs. And I found them on the side of the road. And we took this canvas waste that we had from other projects and then just made little sections. And then we kind of like deconstructed it and reupholstered it. And so we have a matching set. And luckily they were at my house when the fire happened. So they're one of the things we have since before the fire. Which is a totally different topic.
But. Right. Well, I mean, we've experienced fires here on the central coast of California. They're related to lightning strike and something like somebody's muffler dragging alongside of the road or a discarded cigarette. So there's any number of things that can result in fires and with increasing frequency lately. But you're talking about specifically a fire at the factory. Is that correct?
Yes. The business burned down in April of 2021. It was an arson fire and we lost everything except for the this's and that's that were in my house or at a friend's house randomly. So it's fun to have these things because after losing so much, it's so precious to have just these chairs or, you know, for instance.
Well, talk to me about the work of the Portland Garment Factory. Like, what makes it so unique? What are you hoping to achieve in the world of fashion?
Yeah. Well, manufacturing that we do here is really rooted in collaboration with our clients and on the different projects that we work on. So we really like to bring in projects that speak to us and our core values and also just the things we think we're best at making. And in this new iteration of PGF, we have, you know, some new capabilities and we were able to start from scratch, really essentially setting up a new shop and with new equipment. So we kind of went through what we felt we did well in the past and how can we take PGF as it was once known and make it just this much better with this opportunity to kind of like rise out of the ashes, literally, or, you know, so we've set up the new shop and we make all different kinds of things. So like we make masks, lots and lots of masks. This is a black one. You can't see it. Everything, it's a different color on the inside, but we made, you know, probably over 100,000 masks in 2020. And that's something that kind of kickstarted our direct to consumer side of the business because we've always been B2B. So we always work with established designers or brands or large corporations that want to do different initiatives, or maybe they have a rollout of a launch, or maybe they, you know, we once worked with Intel for, they were having their 50th anniversary party and for the on campus at their Intel campus. And they were hiring dancers to go around and like, these were flash mob dancers that were like doing choreographed dancing. So we designed all of their costumes and everything they did. So we do lots of different types of stuff, but I think where we're headed now is just more of the best of what we had already been doing. I just want to keep steering the boat toward collaborating with artists, working with large companies on sustainability projects is really something that I'm pushing for and I'm having a lot of meetings about lately, and really trying to put the burden in decision makers' ears that there's ways to kind of infuse their brands with sustainable action. And I know these companies are huge, and a lot of times it takes a long time to kind of move the dial, so to speak, because it's almost like a bureaucracy in these big companies. But I think that there are small things we can do with decisions if they're just made. And I don't work in those companies, but it's how I see it from the outside. And I want them to consider my perspective because, like, for instance, you know, the Worn Wear, Patagonia's Worn Wear, I'm sure you're familiar with that. Or like Eileen Fisher has her rewear. It was called Green Eileen for years. Like she's a pioneer in the field of creating sustainable fashion from the very beginning, creating timeless fashion and garments that are made to last. And then when they do get that tear or that stain, taking them back in, repairing them, and helping educate her people that are her fans and that buy her clothing in that interaction that we can have with the clothing we wear and the longevity that can come out of buying quality, buying less clothing in the first place. And then when you do buy it, buy high quality, you know, for those of us that are privileged enough to be able to do that, we can take care of those leather boots. We can learn how to mend things. And it's still fashionable, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I wore in honor of this a shirt that I ended up finding at my local Goodwill that I absolutely love. It's like got blue. It's a blue shirt with pineapples that are green printed all over it. And I look at it as my green shirt. I wear it from time to time when I'm going to be discussing, you know, specifically fast fashion and the problems around it. One of the things that Caroline Priebe talks about, and I believe that was episode 15 of Care More Be Better's podcast, my podcast here, was the concept of heirloom fashion and really trying to get people to think about certain garments as something that you might even have in your closet for decades and pass on to the next generation or to some other person that might get the most out of that as well. And I think specifically of things like really nice sweaters, or I have several dresses from the 1950s that I just love. Even a couple really loud and proud, fabulous polyester 1970s getups that are more costume probably than anything else at this point, just because they are so time capsuled. But the reality is that those fashions like tend to circle and come back. I mean, right now we see the 1980s mom jean like coming into full frontal exposure. And it seems that Levi's is even taking some of their old fashions and bringing them right back. So it's interesting to see from a design perspective that some of these things are circling back as well, and gives us this kind of idea that you could, you know, preserve a collection in your closet or perhaps in a box that you might bring out again another day down the road.
I love it. I think that it's obviously, it's a part of this trend of fashion that things come back around. And so my personal philosophy is to just pick things that are me, that I know are at the core of who I am. They're not a trend. And even if every once in a while it is a trend, I happen to have a thing that happens to be trendy in that moment, also align with the true fashion of Brit. And then maybe I acquire that item. But that item goes into because getting dressed for me is really an expression of who I am. And it's very, very important to me. Not that I'm vain every day and that I have to look good, but I have to be and feel a certain way. And part of the way I do that, otherwise I do that with how I eat, right? And how much sleep I get and if I exercise, but I also do it by how I get dressed, because how I get dressed is sharing with the world, this is who I am. This is how I'm feeling today. This is what I'm doing today. And that's a huge part of who I am as an individual. So choosing things for me in my own wardrobe that I know are like very Brit items, I know that they, as long as my, you know, I've had two children. And so in other words, my weight has fluctuated and I've had to stow things away and find, you know, if they come back out, if you grow out of something and you're not going to have it again, you know, you're not going to fit back into it. That's one thing that I understand, passing that on or saving it for your niece or your child or your friend or whatever. But for me, I like to stow things even seasonally. So I like have bins where I put all of my sweaters, and then every year, instead of going, I don't have any winter clothes, because I used to do that. And then I go, wait a minute, you do. They're stowed. Go get them out. And I fall in love with them all over again. And I keep track of them. And I put them, you know, I keep my you know, mothballs or whatever. I, you know, use different things to keep bugs out and everything of my wool sweaters. But it's a practice and it takes time. But it's kind of like anything else, any other collection you have. My husband collects records. You know, he has an extensive collection of many different things. He's a big collector and he keeps them very organized. And I think I kind of picked up the habit from him because I also like having all my clothes in just a huge pile on the floor in my bedroom. How can you not? Because like when I'm getting ready, I have to like try something on and then go, no, that's not today. And you know, it's something I know about myself I'm never going to not have. And so I don't even get mad at myself for it because it's part of who I am. I have to try on 5 things a day.
So, I mean, you brought up a couple of things that I want to comment on because I think it's the reality for many women, especially as we, you know, develop our own sense of personal style and look at our mood and how are we feeling today? What do we want to wear today? But, you know, one of the practices I also take on, which is something you touched on, is having kind of a seasonal shift in your wardrobe. I mean, I live in California, so it's not as dramatic as in some other parts of the country. But what I do is I'll have my summer set of clothing, which is typically a lot of tank tops, a lot of sleeveless dresses and things like that. And I will put them in a bin, and that goes in my attic, right, with my kids' clothes that they're growing out of, that we're preserving for the younger child, and then potentially even organizing to donate to a shelter or to another mom I know or something like that, right? So we kind of keep that cycle running, and it helps to keep my closet organized and not overwhelmed. And then I also organize my closet by color, which I maybe is a little bit much for some people, but I like to be able to find my clothing based on color and coordination. And so it helps me, let's say, keep from having the pile of clothing on the floor because I'm like, I feel like it's a bright day and I need to wear this yellow thing. So kind of go on, Dunley.
Mood-based dressing, very enlightening, or like it can really bring something to your life. But yeah, I think that keeping in mind that a new pair of jeans, for instance, is apparently 2,000 gallons of water or somewhere around that. It's really good to have those kind of statistics in the back of your mind when you are shopping so that you can remind yourself, you know, is this trendy or is this something I'm not going to like in a year? I have another friend who told me that hers is more about shopping affordability, and which I think is also plays into sustainability. And she says for every dollar that she spends on it, she has to wear it that many times. So for instance, if you're buying a $400 black wool jacket, how many, you know, if you have 3 months out of the year and you're going to wear that jacket almost every day, that's 90 days over 4 years. Is that realistic for you? Then it's an investment piece. However, if you're at a thrift store and something's $14 and you think over the course of the next 3 years, you might wear it, you know, 5 times a year, maybe. That was her little way of letting herself buy different things. And I always think about that when I'm shopping, even if I don't practice it necessarily.
Yeah, well, I have a mantra myself too. And for me, I really do wear things until they're either threadbare or no longer wearable. I repaired garments over and over again. Even for my kids, I'm like, look, you can put a hole in a pair of jeans in a week and a half. So we are patching them. Whether or not it's something that looks like, oh, so perfect, it's like, well, what? I have 2 boys. They're 7 and 4, and they're going to wreck these clothing pieces over and over again. So if I can pick them up used, great. And if I can't, I buy new and they put a hole in it, I'm going to patch it as long as I can. And when they've outgrown it and it's no longer useful, it can become rags. It can be recycled into something else, or it can be thrown away. And I really look at that thrown away as like the last ditch effort. I also think many people look at Goodwill as their dumping ground. And so they'll just take a bunch of their clothing and take it to Goodwill, and then Goodwill will dispose of it. And often, because if the clothing is damaged, if it has a hole in it, if it's stained, they're not going to put it out for consumers to buy. And so if all of us will be a little bit more mindful of even the things that we work to donate, that we actually look at the items that are waste as waste, it can change our behaviors too.
Absolutely. And I think there's other things you can do besides give your clothes to Goodwill. If you have something that's a terry cloth sweatshirt, for instance, you can cut that up and use that in your garage for when you change your oil rags, or so you're not using, you know, wiping your hands. You know, you could put it in your paint supplies for next time you paint. There's a whole bunch of different things you can do with some types of fabrics. And then you can even turn them into like wash rags for washing windows or washing cars or something like that. And another thing I like to do instead of go to Goodwill is to host this thing that I don't know. I heard this somewhere that this is only done in Portland. I know that that can't be true, but we call it a naked lady party. And the reason we call it that is because you bring all of your items that you don't want anymore, and you put them in a big pile in the middle of a big table. And it's really fun to host them here at the shop because our tables are huge. And then everybody just goes digging through everyone else's clothes. And then if it's in this intimate setting, the ladies are like, where people are in their bras, like trying on different items. So I think that's where it came up with its name. But so I'd like to take that a step further at my next one. I think we did this once and host it where you do the naked lady part where you bring all your extra stuff. But then we also do like a little area for home goods. And I actually got a really cute mirror once that way. And like we are swapping, like maybe these dishes don't go anymore, but you can swap your dishes. And then also a kid section. And then you find something and it does need mending. Then we just have mending stuff out when I've had these with my friends, and it's been a few years.
The missing button, you know?
So easy to repair, but a lot of people I've met, like a lot of people who don't even know how to put on a button, and they don't know that you can double up the thread. So they go around and around and around so many times every time you go through, you can be bringing two threads with you. That's a very specific thing, but I've just noticed that a lot of people tie one knot at the bottom. Anyway.
Oh my Lord. Okay. Yes. You know, I've patched a lot of things in my time, so I don't tend to run into those issues. What I will say here, they call it just a clothing exchange,
right?
Which I think is great. I really like the branding of the naked lady, a naked lady party, because I mean, people might just get curious about that and go, oh, what is that? Catch their eye when you put an event on Facebook or something like that. Wait a minute, naked lady. Who knows? Maybe I'll get more attention for something like that. So I really love that concept. I love that idea. I've participated in a few myself. And, you know, in many cases, it's something as simple, especially after somebody has gone through a weight fluctuation. It's like a great time to say, I want to host a party and here's why, and bring a bunch of your community together and, you know, sip some wine, have some cheese, enjoy talking and just sharing the experience, giving new life to the clothing. So I love that.
I'm excited to do one when we can.
So what are you working on next?
Well, right now I'm really working on rebooting the factory and getting reconnected with all of our old partners and our old, like for me as the owner of the business, I'm really trying to reach out into the community, into my network of people that we've worked with in the past, and just remind everybody, hello, it is a new year. Portland Garment Factory is back up and running. We had a 7-month hiatus. Thank you for supporting us during that time after the fire, and we're better than ever, and we're ready to make stuff. And we also are even better suited and more, you know, our capacity and our facility and everything is better suited for the kinds of work that we really were already doing and wanted to do more of. We're like ready for it now because of the size and, like I said, the capacity. So I'm just really like spending a lot of time emailing, connecting, Zooming, getting coffee with people, all of those kind of things to try to like put my, because you know, it's 13 years, like there's a lot, I have a lot of tentacles, but the world has changed a lot in the last year and a half. And so I'm just reestablishing all those connections. And then as far as the factory goes, we're doing really exciting things within the, you know, this year we have our recertification for the B Corp. So that's a big part of our decision making all this year, is just remembering, okay, well, how is this going to affect the B Corp? You know, there's basically a third party auditor that comes in and decides where your points come from and whatnot. So even in how we do our internships, even, you know, I'm reestablishing our inclement weather policies. And is it equitable? Like I'm digging into all of the different things that we have established over the last 13 years and just retooling them. You know, we lost our core value flags. That's another thing I'm working on, which were kind of like these big flags we made that represented each core value of the business. And of course, those were lost in the fire. So we're trying to come up with like, maybe we can work on some new sculptures that represent our core values that are an iteration off of those flags, but not an identical representation. You know, like we'll do another, some sort of creative, you know, representation of each value and then hang those up in the new shop. And they're another talking point. They show our customers our capabilities and how good we are at making stuff. And then also just gets us jazzed up for keeping the positivity up in the business, because it's been a very tumultuous last couple of years, as you know, and everybody knows. We've just been through a lot. And I want, always trying to create the culture in my shop with my employees of positivity, not in a toxic way, but definitely in a realistic way and in an empowering way. We have a lot of people going through a lot of different life stages, and, you know, it's just been hard. So I'm trying to be there for the people that work for us because they're so dedicated. But, and that's happening like the first week of February. So I think anything in the next 3 weeks will be perfect because I'm going to be trying to point a lot of people to our gift shop because I'm really trying to reboot my company and bring in revenue after just like, you know.
Yeah. I hear you.
The year of hell.
Right. I mean, I can only imagine, like I had to evacuate my home because there were fires in the area. So, you know.
Yeah. I was just going to say you live in kind of Northern California?
Yeah, I live in Santa Cruz County in Scotts Valley, and our entire town was evacuated. They made us all leave.
When was that?
September 2020 for about 10 days. Yeah, I was just finishing one of my terms at graduate school and actually had to vacate my home just as I submitted my finals. And yeah, it was rough. We went with our two kids, our dog, our nanny, her dogs, my fish tank, which I consolidated three fish tanks into, and, you know, an animal or two didn't make it. The dogs were good, but it was just really, really disruptive. And, you know, granted, our house didn't burn and many of our friends' homes were safe, but we did have a few friends who lost their homes.
Oh my God.
And are just now having to rebuild. And so I'm sure you are intimately aware of all of that jazz, but, you know, you learn that your fire insurance doesn't cover certain things and it's impossible to be wise on everything, but they're doing much better now. And part of the challenge is that there were so many structures damaged or completely lost that construction companies are very, very busy and it takes a long, long time to rebuild. So,
yeah. And I bet now we're having all of these delays in shipping and everything, and that's, and shortages in steel or in the nails and things. Like, we've experienced that just moving in here, and like our electrician is like, oh, I can't get this wiring or whatever. All the equipment we bought had to come from a place where they had to have metal. It's just, it's crazy what a global like gridlock can actually, you know, I don't think I ever could have imagined this. And I actually am afraid it's going to get worse before it gets any better.
Now, are you doing things like creating swag items for some of the corporations that you talk about serving, like t-shirts and things along those lines that are considered more basic?
Yeah, we don't do a ton of swag items for other companies. We do them for, we make Portland Garment Factory swag. And the reason really is costing. So if somebody comes to me and they're like, we have a launch, like we were talking about earlier, and we want to put a free t-shirt in every bag, or it's a trade show, a t-shirt made in Portland is going to be way more expensive than a t-shirt made in China. And a lot of people are not educated in how long it takes to make things, what the materials are, or why it would be, you know, why is a canned tomato cost a certain amount? And why does a tomato grown at a local farm cost a certain amount? There's a reason, and our reasons are very similar. And so anyway, we don't do a lot of that kind of work because it's just not enough. It's an affordability thing. But I always, when I get approached by people that want to do trade show swag, I'm always saying, hey, I have an idea. Why don't we make one really cool thing that you give to everyone? One thing, and put all that budget, because I know they have like $60 per person. If you think of everything, the water bottle and the pen with the name and all of the, like the crappy tote bag and all of the things you can get, we could make one really cool thing, but we'll see. So, I mean, we do have sustainable options for swag items. It's just, it's hard. It's hard to, that's my job, is selling that idea to the people.
Yeah. And it's a balancing act because it's like, what is the return on investment in the mind of the corporation if they're just trying to create something? And it's a balancing act I've had with the show because I'm looking at what I might want to make and what did I end up with? I end up with a coffee mug because it's going to probably, you know, be around for a very long time. It's utilitarian, it's made of ceramic, and I could have it custom printed in the United States. It's probably originally from China, but it's ceramic. It's pretty basic. It's a tough one. I'm actually working on a project right now for a brand I'm about to support the launch of, and we sourced a company in Northern California that makes organic t-shirts, and we're going to print it with an algae ink. And so it's more sustainable and not using petrochemicals in it, right? But the cost of that t-shirt is a lot more than what a typical swag item is. And so our intention with the brand launch is actually to sell them and to use that as an education point, as well as provide it to key influencers as part of the launch so that they understand a little bit, and then create that kind of campaign around what it took to make this beautiful organic cotton simple t-shirt, but that's well made in the United States and printed with an algae ink that is also made in the United States. Mm-hmm. So all of those things, I think it opens the door to have a deeper conversation if you're actually willing to spend the time educating on it. And I think just a lot of people aren't, or a lot of corporations aren't. We're moving there though.
Yeah, I do get a little bit of a glaze over when I talk about that kind of stuff. It depends on who you're talking to and like what the actual project is. Some people are that come to us are very passionate and they're decision makers within their organization. And then sometimes they're not decision makers. They're a project manager. Well, project managers make a lot of decisions, but let's just say maybe this is a person who's like, look, I just need to get this done. I just need you to do this. I can't go down this road. And I get that too. So I'm always working with different people that are different backgrounds, where they're coming from, and trying to do what we can control, like what Portland Garment Factory can control in our interaction with these companies. Because yes, we do work with large companies. And so we have to just focus on what we can control. When in that conversation, we're not able to move the dial, we're going to move the dial inside the factory. And that's the way I've always looked at it. I feel like that was a kind of just a natural kind of way to do business for me, just because, you know, I want to do things the way I want to do them. And I know when I can't move a dial with another person's business, that makes sense. So I'm just going to keep making decisions within my company. And that's kind of how we got to like the zero waste and all of the different, you know, initiatives we do within the company. Like we also eventually, you know, within the last few years, adopted some bioswales, which are, you know, on the sides of the streets. They've been putting them in here in Portland, and you can adopt them and then you can go and clean them up, and the city will actually give you vests and like the little garbage grabbers. And we bought everybody thick gloves, and we just go out there as a team, rain or shine, whenever, and we get all of it, unclog all the drains if it's in the rainy part of the season. So that's something I can control. I can pay my employees to go do something for the environment that is important. It's like helping with the downspouts and all of that. It's helping with the rainwater runoff.
Well, you're speaking to my heart now, because a few weeks back, one of our drains in our home got clogged just from the roof. And as a result, my office flooded. So the space you're looking at now had about 2 inches of water everywhere. And we, you know, soaked it up with all the towels we had in the house and did what we could. But really, it was just a result of a single downspout at our house getting overrun. And all of the water on that side of the house essentially dumping down that side of the house and ending up under our foundation, like causing all sorts of problems and potential damage. But in the scope of things, it was a relatively minor issue. We were able to get out of it. But like, heck, when you have that happen in a city street, suddenly the city street is flooded. And, you know, who does that impact? And how hard is it then to recover from something as simple as that? Especially with the types of storms we've been having lately, these increasing severity. They're calling them atmospheric rivers now and things along those lines. Like, we have to develop new language just to describe the types of storms that we are seeing now.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I know that that's a different topic, but I love talking about that kind of stuff. And it's part of our dining room conversation in the evenings. And I find it very fascinating what city municipalities do to combat things like, you know, storm water runoff, and how does that affect our salmon? It does. And that's kind of like, I love learning about that kind of stuff.
And the clothing you choose, and if you shop used, and, you know, what you commit to bringing into your home. Because, I mean, heck, one of the topics that we could easily tie to, from garments to stormwater runoff, is things like microplastics that end up in our oceans, and some of that comes from our laundering of our clothing, and other bits that just come from decomposing plastic that is in the streets and that runs into our waters. So, you know, minimizing the unnatural fibers that you have in your closet, or buying used, or even using, as Patagonia suggests, their special bag that prevents their fleeces from allowing microplastics into the water, which is kind of novel and incredible, but maybe long-term they should just stop producing polar fleece.
Right. I wonder if, because a lot of the, what quote unquote, man-made fabrics, non-natural fibers have a lot of use to them. They have longevity of their own. And while they are emitting microplastics when you wash them, and when you're just wearing them, I don't know, they also protect from the elements, and they allow us to do things like see nature and connect with nature, which makes us want to be better to the planet and all of these things. So I think that for me, I wonder if it's a multi-pronged approach and maybe you have the fleece, but you, if you can have that special bag, I did not know about that. It sounds really cool. I don't have a polar fleece, but I do have technical fabric items that I wash. And I do like to use the right, you know, like the laundry detergent that isn't hard on the environment. I also have we talk a lot here at the, over the lunch table about hang drying our laundry. We all love to hang dry our laundry. That's not that hard. And it sounds like it's a big chore, but it's actually like, for me, I feel like it's a more intimate situation with my clothes where it's not just my intimates, but it's like all of my clothes. And I'm hanging them up and going, hi, friend, you're cute. I can't wait to wear you. And I'm kind of like it's that connection with my stuff, like the stuff I'm in charge of in this world. I'm connecting with it and I'm liking it more. That's only a positive thing because I'm going to take care of it better. So I think that we can do a lot of different things. I look to Patagonia as they're just such a huge inspiration. I think they are, and of course should be for other large companies that have a lot, you know, space to explore things like a worn wear program. That's where I think it's headed. And then utilizing your local factory like me to bring in those items, fix them up and ship them out. Like that's what we have down. So I hope to be doing projects like that with companies that have a budget that can, you know, keep my fat. I mean, because I'm also a business and I have to keep money coming through my company. So I have to get projects that pay us. So it's like really complicated.
Yeah. And it's a balancing act for sure. And I agree with you on the worn wear piece too, because what Patagonia is doing is actually normalizing used clothing in a way that is very healthy. They also repair all of their items and can do so via mail or if you go by one of their shops. So I think that's all very, very healthy. Ultimately reduces waste across the board. I like my synthetic fabric workout gear more than my cotton and wool. I've tried, but I do my best to wash them delicately and make sure that I'm air drying them too, so that I introduce less microplastics into our environment. And I keep them a long, long time. They do last, I will say that, but it's still something I'm trying to work to minimize in my own wardrobe and that of my boys. So, you know, we do a lot of laundry here though. So I gotta say, when you've got two kids and a husband who wears, you know, Levi's cotton jeans and you try to air those dry, they take forever and they take up a lot of space. So those go right in the dryer.
Yeah, my trick for that is when I air dry things that don't really want to be air dried, like
jeans.
Jeans or towels, I will leave them for, you know, 48 hours and then I'll zap them in the dryer for like 10 minutes and it fluffs them up and gets the heat on them enough that it gets them all wrinkled free. But that's the only, I mean, I do that with a spray bottle of water and then zap it in the dryer if the thing, anything that you have, I mean, even if it says dry clean only. Mm-hmm. Usually you can zap it in the dryer and get the wrinkles out and you don't need to go to the dry cleaner and you can just like get the smells out some other way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My trick is you take a washcloth and you get it damp and like put some essential oil on it and throw it in the dryer for a few minutes with it.
Yes. So
that actually is very helpful. Like a lavender or a lemon scent or something like that. Something that's natural, but that, you know, it helps to take that edge off. That's something I've done too.
Yeah. I love that idea. And I think it's cool that your podcast is a lot about connecting about these bigger picture issues, but kind of bringing it back down to our own personal lives and how we can do small things and actually be activists in our own way each day in our lives. And maybe we don't realize that, but when you're reusing and reusing plastic bags, I mean, I make my kids wash out their Ziploc bags for their lunches because I can't always give my children reusable, you know, like a glass jar for their lunch with the plastic topper, because teenagers do not always bring home their lunch you pack them.
I know. And I had the same issue with my boys.
Yeah.
Where I put it in their lunches, like we got these reusable zipper pouches and I put their name on it and everything. It's plastic, but like reusable multiple times. And we put them in their lunches and we used to have like 8. Now we have 2 and they just didn't come home with them. So it's like, okay, so how much greener is this if it's just going to end up lost or maybe they tossed it in the garbage or it got put in some other kid's lunch on the way home and now I don't have it anymore. So it's a constant balancing act that you run through, I think. But I really enjoyed this conversation with you today, Britt. So I wanted to ask you a couple of final questions. And one that I like to ask all my guests is simply, you know, if there's something that we haven't talked about or a question that I haven't asked that you wish I had, what would it be? And if there is one of those, then you can go ahead and answer it. And if not, you can just tell us, you know, what are your closing thoughts or the sorts of things that you would want our audience to walk away from this discussion today thinking about?
I think that something that you could have as a takeaway is that you can have a very abundant and fulfilling fashion lifestyle and fashion. You can do your fashion. You can wear your clothes without going to buy everything at big box stores, malls, online. You know, I would say that if anything seems like it's a really good deal, if a dress costs $20, I mean, I have a teenager, and I have all of her friends coming over and telling me, you know, about these like Fashion Nova. It's kind of like Forever 21 type of thing. And like, oh my God, it's only $4.99. We have the conversation right then and there. How on earth do you think this mini skirt is $4.99? So I think that that's a big takeaway, is that you should be asking yourself the question, when something's too good to be true, it is, just like everything else in the world. If it's too good to be true, 99% of the time it is too good to be true. And there's somebody's losing out in this. And oftentimes it's a human person. So I think that's a takeaway, and that it's not cool to have more. What's cool is how you wear what you already have, and how creative and inspiring you can get with, you know, wearing your winter clothes in the summer and flipping them back around and, you know, like mixing up your looks. And, you know, to me, that's more inspiring than just people that have like huge closets and like 30 pairs of heels or something like that. Like doesn't inspire me.
What you call a curated collection, something along those lines. Well, I absolutely agree with you. And I think that's a really good note to leave our audience with. Really think about what you're bringing into your home and what it says about you, and more isn't always better. So, I mean, who paid for that $20 dress? It was somebody that made it, that sacrificed their time, energy, and effort, their working conditions, and perhaps a lot more, and also the environment. So if we're borrowing from our future to live in the now, what type of world are we leaving for our kids and for the next generation? So I think we all need to shift our thinking and ultimately adapt and change just a little bit when it comes to how we use textiles and the sorts of things that we commit to bringing into our home. That's what I'd have them take with them anyway. And you can get a cute shirt even at Goodwill. So I'm a testament to that here. Mm-hmm. And I also love your chair, and the story behind it is just marvelous. So I'm so happy I asked.
Thank you. Oh, my jacket's from the Goodwill from about 7 years ago, and it is falling apart, but I'm still just wearing it, this leather jacket.
You still love it. Well, leather can last forever if you treat it well. Yeah.
I'll take care of that. The cobbler's children don't have shoes.
That's true, right? The cobbler's children don't have shoes. Fantastic. Well, at this point in the show, we've certainly come to, I think, a really great stopping point. So, Britt, I just want to thank you so much for taking this time with me today. I will be sure to include links to what you're doing with the Portland Garment Factory and show notes. And just thank you for all of your efforts. This has been incredible. Now, listeners, I'd like to invite you to act. It doesn't have to be huge. It could be as simple as just sharing this podcast with people in your community that you think would benefit from hearing it. You could just think a little slower, get on board with a slower and more sustainable fashion, care a little bit more, and be a little bit better. Together, we can create the future we want, and I encourage you to visit my action page on caremorebebetter.com. Lean into discovery, stay curious, ask questions, and get involved. Thank you now and always for being a part of this pod and this community, because together we really can do so much more. We can care more and we can be better. We can even slow down fashion and regenerate Earth.
Thanks for listening to Care More, Be Better, a podcast for social good. To make sure you never miss an episode, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And share with your friends to help us reach more people and spread more social good.
This show is brought to you by Podditize, podcast hosting and done-for-you production services that get you heard by more of your ideal listeners. Visit podditize.com to book a free strategy call. That's podditize.com.